Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
This, of course, is very much of a guesstimate, but my extrapolation put the date at around 400 years in the future.
For the entire world.
Exactly.
So says Robert Carneiro, curator of South American ethnology at the American Museum of Natural History in New York and author of Evolutionism in Cultural Anthropology, A Critical History, and The Muse of History and the Science of Culture, among others. In his previous visit to IDN, Bob discussed how the theory of evolution can be applied to explain the steady movement of human populations from small autonomous villages to kingdoms, empires, and modern states in what has been called the Carneiro circumscription theory, named after Robert Carneiro, and how methods of dispute resolution have evolved along the way to keep large populations in complex societies in harmony. In his return visit to IDN, Bob expands on his views and, looking at a historical trend towards increasing political consolidation, we then talk about what it might be possible to predict for changes in dispute resolution over the next few years, the next few hundred years.
Let's just to cover briefly what we were last time that we spoke, that your studies have focused on the emergence of the state, political unification through the evolution of culture as new traits get introduced into the society. As you've studied it, you can virtually predict with some degree of confidence which characteristics are bound to emerge if a state is going to become increasingly complex and unified.
Yeah, for example, take courts of law. When you have markets being only occasional and not involving very many of the population, there's not much occasion for disputes or for having adjudication of problems. But as markets grow in size and in frequency, for example, the Spaniards were amazed to find that the market in Mexico City was enormous, larger than the one in Seville or in Salamanca.
The Aztec market.
Yes, 40 or 50,000 persons might be at the market at the same time. And when you have that many people involved, you have to have some means of taking care of the problems and the disputes that arise. And in fact, there was a special court system in charge exclusively of handling market disputes.
So here's the question about today and into the future. Since we're all now together connected on this planet, and at least with the technology that we have today, we can't go colonize other planets, and we seem to have inhabited virtually every habitable corner. Are we circumscribed today?
Well, certainly in one respect we are, and which means that one nation may very well impinge on another, and that leads to conflict between them, very often resolved by warfare, occasionally by dispute resolution of some other, of a peaceful sort. And this, one can predict that will continue to be the case. In other words, although the rate of population growth has declined, it's still growing. And it's hard to predict when there'll be a time when there won't be population growth. And this, one can predict, will result in more pressure of one state against another with all the attending difficulties that come with it.
Do you see trends over time towards fewer states or more states?
Well, this is very interesting. I've estimated, and this is sort of a wild guess, that the largest number of autonomous political units in the world existed around 1500 BC, and that there were then something like 500,000 autonomous political units. And most of those, of course, were just villages.
Villages. 500,000 villages.
Right. Well, 500,000... No, there were a few states and more chiefdoms,
right.
But still, by far the largest number of these autonomous units were just plain villages.
That was about 1500 BC. 3,500 years ago.
Yeah. But since then, there's been an irresistible trend for the number of political units to decrease and their size to increase. So that now, if we count the number of states recognized by the UN, there are 193 autonomous political units in the world, down from 500,000.
Yeah. So wait, can you, if you've looked at this trend, can you predict or can you make a reasonable guess as to how it will continue over the next hundreds or thousands of years?
Well, I think one can, that the trend seems to have been so irresistible over these last 3,500 years that if you plot the number of autonomous political units in existence at various dates and you simply extrapolate that line, the question is, at what point is the line which shows a number of units, as it declines, at what point does it reach one on the graph?
One state for the entire world.
Exactly.
And what year is that?
Well, this, of course, is very much of a guesstimate, but my extrapolation put the date at around 400 years in the future.
So in 400 years, if we continue at the same rate over the last 3,500 years, in the year 400 years, that would be 2,408. We'll all be living under Big Brother or whatever one government.
Yes, I think that's what the projection is. But it's hard to say. I would add, before the Iraq War is when I made this prediction. Now, as a result of it, when we see how difficult it is for one country to subdue another and pacify it and incorporate it, I would perhaps put the date a little bit more in the future.
Really? Because your theory presumes that political unification will occur how? By conflict and conquest or by peaceful?
Well, the way it's been conquest and incorporation almost exclusively in the past. There's been no other way in which there's any significant increase in the size of a political unit has taken place. Even in the United States, where you could say, well, there were 13 colonies that fused into one, it was the threat of having the British come back and reconquer the colonies that impelled them to join into one state. So that, and some people have argued that, well, no, they don't like the idea of warfare being the mechanism still to be used to gain this political unification. And they think that some peaceful means, that United Nations might be the route to go to get there. But there's nothing in the past to give credence to this. So until and unless I see some evidence to the contrary, I say that much as it seems that it's difficult for any nation to become strong enough and have the desire to conquer the rest of the world, in 400 or 500 years, somehow or other, it'll happen.
Right. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about how this is going to take place?
Well, I'm a short-term pessimist and a long-term optimist. If we came back 1,000 years from now, I'm sure we'd find the world unified, peaceful, and in many ways very advanced.
And short-term?
Short-term, right after the Second World War, I would have predicted that I would not have predicted all of the conflicts between nations and within nations that have occurred, so that I think we can expect more of the same. I wouldn't, 30 years ago, a lot of people were talking about the Third World War and thinking it was imminent, or at least would certainly come sometime. Now it doesn't look as if it's such, because there's really one superpower. But who knows what will happen in the future? The will to become a dominant country by overrunning other countries isn't present in our country. I mean, sure, there are a small group of people who like to think of this as the future for the U.S., But I think the Iraq War has caused those people to rethink their strategy. So I think we'll see more of the same indefinitely into the future, with no big wars, but who knows what will happen 100 years from now.
Right. Maybe smaller wars and some degree of consolidation. What is this going to mean for now? What we've come together to talk about for dispute resolution. If we say now that in the next 400, 500, 600 years, we're going to move towards gradually some sort of political unification, however that may occur. What could you predict, given that you looked at the past? You can at past societies, you can predict the emergence of traits.
Well, since I predicted more disputes in the future, one would expect there to be a greater development of mechanisms to avoid them and to resolve them. And I think that's very likely to happen. Already we're seeing that. I mean, your work is a perfect example of institutions that are developing to handle these disputes. Now, an increase in the number of occupational specialties is one clear hallmark of cultural evolution. Among the groups that I've studied, the Indian tribes in Amazonia, there's no full-time specialist in anything. There's a part-time specialist, the shaman, and a part-time specialist, the chief. Years ago, I went through the Manhattan classified telephone directory, and I counted more than 1,000 occupational specialists. I'm sure today there would be even more. So that's the differentiation that Herbert Spencer spoke of.
That's interesting, you know, because we've seen that even in my area over the last 10, 15 years, where you've now got these professions emerging. I know when I graduated from law school, I said that I wanted to work in international litigation, and I was told by law firms it doesn't exist. Huh. You know, there's no such, you know, actually, one lawyer, when I interviewed for a job at a law firm, and interestingly enough, the law firm that hired me, he said, well, litigation ends at the airport. It's not international. Mm-hmm. And yet today, international dispute resolution, as I'd say, it's a growing specialization for a lot of firms, and as is the adjudication role, is also a specialization that's growing.
Take the field of medicine. Now, the shaman is first and foremost a physician. Now, the techniques he uses, recovering a lost soul, digging out an intrusive object, are things that we no longer think of as valid and effective medical means. But one specialty existed at the level of the Indian villages in Amazonia. Nowadays, if you started listing all the different kinds of medical specialties, there would be literally dozens of them. So one profession has divided up, has effloresced into dozens and dozens of specialties. And that can be duplicated in many spheres of culture.
So as we would become more global, more unified, and as commerce connects us greater together, we would expect to see greater specialization in the roles of the people.
Of the
dispute resolution professionals.
Right, yeah. Now, Adam Smith, more than 200 years ago, wrote a lot about the division of labor. And he, of course, already it was very evident that this had taken place to a very considerable degree in Europe. And that's division of labor is the same thing. It's just more and more, each occupation, each profession is divided up into more and more aspects, which is turned over to a specialist who can do the job better because he specializes in this and doesn't have to do everything else.
So you would expect there to be, people who are capable of resolving disputes internationally, the profession of international dispute resolution.
Exactly, yeah.
What about adjudicators? If you've looked at autonomous societies as they emerge into larger, more complex political organizations, would you predict, for example, international adjudicators? And we have this arbitrators and mediators who work internationally. Is that something you would expect?
Would you distinguish between adjudicators and mediators?
Well, yeah, in my profession, yes, because a mediator is for us is a facilitator. An arbitrator, for us, an adjudicator would be a judge or an arbitrator, someone who decides. It provides a decision that is binding on the parties. And a mediator is someone who will help them facilitate so they don't have to go to a binding adjudicator. And in complex international commerce, you sometimes need the one, but very often you also need the other, because you don't always want to wind up with a binding dispute resolution. You'd rather try to settle it among yourselves.
Yeah, I suppose that in the case of an adjudicator, one party may be satisfied, the other party may be dissatisfied. Whereas with mediation, it's the process of bringing the two parties to decide, yeah, this is the best we can do.
Right. So maybe you would need as tools to help the parties understand how to use this.
Right. And for parties to understand that this tool is available and it's profitable to them to use it rather than open dispute or even to adjudication.
Well, one of the questions I've had is how these professions can grow if each side isn't armed with the same level of information. If I think that it's going to be more advantageous for you, I may not want to opt into it. I may not want to use this method. So maybe one of the things you might predict, and I'm asking someone who's seen these tools emerge or traits emerge over societies, is mechanisms for becoming informed about mediators and arbitrators, yeah. The people who help decide disputes.
Yeah, and I suppose here natural selection might operate too. Slowly, gradually, it might become obvious to first one party, then both, that this is a better way of solving things than some other way. So that just as corporations, for example, were an institution designed so that individuals didn't risk all of their fortune when they went into business, it was a way of limiting the amount of money they could lose. And it was a very efficient and safe way of going into business. And so the corporation became the standard way of organizing a big business.
And you would expect that you could predict that these institutions, these forms of dispute resolution, that may begin to would they supplant, do you think, other forms of dispute resolution?
Perhaps over time you would see a gradual, again, maybe a kind of balanced polymorphism. Maybe for some kinds of disputes, one form superior, and for another, the other type.
And they would coexist.
In different proportions, depending on relative advantage in different situations.
If I were to predict one of the things to help the global private dispute resolution, it would be that there would be greater access to information about these, mm-hmm. about the not just that there would be professions that would emerge, but you'd also see access to information about the specializations. It's just not enough to say there's somebody who knows how to do things. You need to find out who that person is who knows how to do things.
Ultimately, leads to greater predictability. I mean, if the system is one in which whoever can pay the highest bribe wins the case, the other party is going to be very dissatisfied. And if conflict resolution involves a high degree of satisfaction on the part of both parties, then the system that brings it about is certainly superior to one that leads one party.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for coming back on.
Well, you're certainly welcome.
And maybe we should get back together again in 500 years and see if you were right.
Right.
Okay.
I look forward to that.
Me too.
Okay.
Robert Carnero is currently at work on his next book, The Evolution of the Human Mind, From Supernaturalism to Naturalism, An Anthropological Perspective.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.